It's time to step into the Coming Out Lounge, a cool, safe space to be true to your sexual self, with your host, Rick Clemens. Rick has helped hundreds of people come out of the closet, and now each week he's bringing you cool insights for loving and accepting yourself, boosting your self-confidence, and living a guilt-free, purpose-filled life on the other side of the closet doors. Cuddle up with yourself and get ready for heartwarming coming out stories, ideas for living authentically, and tips for being fully self-expressed. Now here's your host, Coming Out Coach Rick.
Hey, 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 Closet Busters. It is time once again for you to step out, step up, and step into living your powerful truth and to come out of those closets and leave the wire hangers where they are. In fact, today we're going to play and we're going to have fun and we're going to explore the thought of, can you imagine if Joan Crawford, yes, Mommy Dearest, was your mom and you turned to her and said, Mommy, 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 I'm gay, lesbian, bisexual, transgender. What might Mommy do? Would she smear your reputation? Would she beat you with those wire hangers? What might happen? Well, we're going to go visit her, visit the real her, as Lucille LeSueur, which is Joan Crawford's true name. And we're going to bring her to life with this beautiful person that is out there writing books and talking about her from that perspective. Now, I know you're probably wondering, okay, Rick, have you freaking lost your mind? What are you doing here? This is about coming out and being who you are. Well, I don't think there's any better way to see what it's like to be who you truly are than to go take one of Hollywood's greatest icons and invite her to show up. Yes, to truly show up as her real self. And with that, I'm going to invite her in, and we're going to call her simply Elle. So, Elle, welcome to the Coming Out Lounge podcast.
Rick, thank you. And I'm actually here as Elle's publicist and spokesmodel today.
Oh, so we have somebody new here. So what is it like being her publicist and spokesmodel? That's got to be a handful and a full-time job in and of itself.
Well, it changes moment to moment, and it's a pretty demanding position. And you basically just take dictation and execute with no questions asked.
Oh, so you don't get to be who you want to be. You're just pretty much going by what she hands to you and pretty much is the dictator is what I'm hearing.
If we know anything about Joan Crawford, it's that she wanted to maintain the control. So the answer to your question statement is yes.
Mm-hmm. And so I'm curious, given the intro I just did, what might happen if Joan did have a gay or lesbian, bisexual or transgender child? What do you think, knowing what you know about her, how would she react to that, do you think?
Wow. Well, first of all, do you think Joan Crawford was emotionally dialed in enough to accept or understand that? That said, Joan Crawford had a lot of gay friends in Hollywood.
Yeah.
And maybe what she might initially do is react badly on how it might play for her publicly and tell you to just keep it to yourself.
Right.
And then maybe after she had cleaned a closet in a bathroom or two or at manic pace, she might have come around to realize that, you know, gay people had a lot to do with my success. Sets, costumes, scripts, direction, friendship, support. And she probably long-term would be okay with it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think, you know, it's interesting when you think about the era that she was in Hollywood and everything she became as that Hollywood icon. It was a time where there was a lot of don't ask, don't tell going on. And I think in this day and age, in our modern world in 2016, now we're starting to see, wow, those golden eras of Hollywood, so to speak, were also the golden eras of hiding a lot of truth in the Hollywood hills, so to speak. So I know you're representing her as her publicist, specifically around a new book that's come out. And I'd love to have you lovingly guide us into what this book is about, because I think it's kind of like what it's like to live in the closet. You're showing different sides of her as she writes this book. So why don't you tell us a little bit about Mommy Smearest?
Sure. The book is Mommy Smearest. It is a parody of Joan Crawford in the Mommy Dearest character. And the subtitle of the book is See Joan Crawford in Bitch, Selfie Ain't Make You No Movie Star.
Hmm.
The premise is that Joan Crawford was denied entry to Hollywood Heaven, big surprise to everybody, for reasons well known to her. And she sort of seduced her way past the guard, who was an aspiring rapper, into heaven on probation.
Mm.
Her parole terms included coming back to Earth to to rescue true celebrity from social media posers and reality starlets, and also to explain herself as Mommy Dearest, which she sort of kind of maybe does or does not do in a section called Monster Dearest, Keeping Up with the Crawfords.
Wow. So it's almost like there's a little bit of her own coming out story going on in this book about coming out to say, wait, this is really who I am, and explaining what the real Mommy Dearest was all about.
Well, she sort of does that, but in a really absurdist way. First of all, she claims absolute CEO executive immunity as head of her household.
Mm-hmm.
And then she puts forth a number of scientific-based best practice principles of which we knew nothing, such as surprising germs in the middle of the night when they're vulnerable and asleep. And that's why you clean bathrooms without notice in the dark.
Mm-hmm. That's funny. And what do you think is the big message Joan's trying to get across with this book? Is it more just, here's the real truth, here's some things you don't see in me? What is the message within the book at this point?
The real message of this book, Rick, is about peeling back the superficial to what's real beneath it. It's written in a very absurdist parody way, meant to be funny, line to line to line. It's not meant to be heavy.
Mm-hmm.
And it's about breaking those chains of enslavement that so many of us live under when we live according to the superficial rules of life versus the real rules, what we really are. And we seem to live in a cultural moment where a lot of people seem to be under the mental affliction that they need to be reality starlets with their own TV show. And if they don't have a TV show, the next best thing is their smartphone, and they can issue status updates and selfies like their movie stars issuing press releases. And this infuriates Miss Crawford.
Mm.
And she's back to rescue true celebrity from these posers.
Mm. You know, I find this interesting that you say it's about peeling back the layers and getting to the truth of it, because this is where we align with the Coming Out Lounge message of how do you peel back the layers of your truth to be who you are as a gay, lesbian, bisexual, transgender. And I think oftentimes this is what we don't see playing out in the Hollywood world, is we almost don't want celebrities to be them real selves. We don't want to really see this. And then suddenly we put them up on these pedestals, and then we get very, very disappointed, which is what happens in real life with a lot of people who come out of the closet. Everybody sees them in this way, and then suddenly, oh, that's a big disappointment that you're here. So if Joan could give, you know, some of our listeners some insights about how do you peel back these layers, so to speak, and you begin to reveal yourself. And I know she's probably got some quippy, sarcastic way of doing this, but how do you start to really reveal yourself as the true person that you are while maintaining your own celebrity, so to speak?
Well, Joan recognizes the power of celebrity. She certainly recognizes how much work it took to establish and sustain her own celebrity. And the ongoing message through her book, and she pulls down a lot of institutions, to name a few, the New York Times, Pro Football, Vatican City, and as well she pulls down executives and politicians. And she is, in the book, struck by the poseur nature of our culture today. Everyone, or many people, seem to feel that they need to put on a drag outfit, whether it's the executive in the executive power suit miniskirt, whether it's the professional athlete, or whether it's people at the mall dressing like a professional athlete or an executive, and they're neither, but they seem to think they need to put forth this image. And Joan's message to the book is, dig beneath this drag that you put on and find out, who are you at core? That's good enough.
Well, I think that's a core message right there. That is, you know, that's kind of a tweetable moment already here of who you are at the core is what's good enough. And too often, and I'm talking to you listeners out there, too often you don't believe that just being you in your gay skin, your lesbian skin, bisexual, transgender, whatever it is, it can't be good enough, because you've been told so many times, oh, but you can't be that. That's not how you're supposed to show up in life. Yet, through this wonderful wisdom of Joan Crawford and this book that she's put out that kind of starts to dissect all this, you can see that peeling back the layers and getting to that beautiful source energy of yourself is where the real starlight and the star shows up. So I know throughout the book, because I've read little bits and pieces of it in preparation for this chat today. Throughout the book, there's lots of different things that are going on, lots of different storylines come together. And there's even, believe there's a pretty high-profile gay society wedding that occurs. So, obviously, she is embracing of the gay community. And if she could channel, and maybe I'm going to have you channel for her since she's not represented here right now. If she could channel her opinions about what's happening right now in society around gay and lesbian acceptance, what would she probably be saying to society as a whole?
Well, that is a great question, Rick, and very probing, and one I would expect from you. And I think Joan makes it clear in the book, because that high-profile gay society wedding you talk about, which is to take place in Manhattan, is a subplot within the book. And one reviewer called this book fantastically layered, which I'll just steal to share here. And this gay marriage subplot is one of those layers. And the two men were brought together as boyhood social outcasts, each of them, and they were united to their forced school desegregation. And then decades later, they're successful men in Manhattan and they have their wedding. So I think Joan makes it really clear whose side she's on. And through this book, the underdogs win. And the people who behave like they are the top dogs and are mean to the underdogs lose in this book. And I think this reveals a certain niceness within Joan Crawford, or at least this parody character. And I think it illustrates her understanding that it can be very difficult to be gay. You're not accepted. And as you alluded to, there are no shortage of outside messages, from beginning with family, extending to sociocultural cues, that we are not good enough and we need to cover this. And I think perhaps you and I, in a certain demographic era, really appreciate that, because as you just alluded to earlier, it was not common to be out when we were young men.
Right.
And it was very difficult. You simply did not want to be outed or even suspected.
But don't you think some of that's being channeled through Joan? Because I don't know why this just hit me as you were describing that, but to be who she was, the way she was in Hollywood at the time that she was becoming, you know, from starlet to star, there was almost a brashness to who she was and a boldness of how she showed up as a woman in Hollywood that actually wasn't any more accepted in many ways than being gay or lesbian. Don't you think this is why she's had such an impact in the world?
That's a great observation. And one of the reasons, or collect the basket of reasons, that Joan seems to be so popular with gay people was her brashness, her beauty, her brains, her stamina. And as gay people, we can appreciate that because we know what it is to try to push those attributes against a world who is pushing back very hard. And you're right, she went to Hollywood and really kind of kicked open doors on her own terms and survived as long as she did by doing it in her way.
Right. As you were describing this, you know, the brashness, the boldness, the beauty, you know, sometimes celebrity and individuals, I'm going to kind of bring this down to individual people as well, but let's start with celebrity. Celebrities can be known for their beauty. Celebrities can be known for their brashness. You know, they can be known for their boldness, but when you have all these things kind of packaged together, you know, in one, it's almost too much. But yet, to be able to kick those doors open and be that person, and, you know, I would say, you know, she was probably one of the first ones that really, for women in Hollywood, began to make this okay and acceptable. And now we have, you know, many, many, you know, whether it's Sandra Bullock, whether it's, you know, Jennifer Aniston, you know, all these other people now showing up, that, you know, the Meryl Streeps of the world are like, yes, we are here. And obviously in the last year or so, we've really seen the push for women producers and women actors to be more readily, you know, known in the world, which kind of parallels where we are in the gay and lesbian, bisexual, transgender struggle right now. It's like, we are here. Yes, we're queer and we're not going anywhere, which is pretty much the same journey of, we are women. We are here. We're in Hollywood. And we're not going anywhere either. So I think there's a beautiful parallel there. So,
well, you're so right. And let's face it, no bureaucracy gives up any ground to any newcomers without a big fight.
Absolutely.
And we saw it in the civil rights movement. We saw it in the women's movement. That's just the way it works. And Hollywood is a bureaucracy, and they're not going to give up anything without a fight.
Yeah, Yeah. So let's kind of go back to the book that Joan's written now under her original name. So for the listeners, I'm going to have you repeat her original name. It's Lucille.
And Lucille LeSueur.
And why do you think she was so compelled to come back and write this book under Lucille LeSueur's name rather than her own name?
Well, as it says in the very front of the book, Joan didn't want to be all over the top with, you know, her name on everything. When Mae West did a show, it was called Sex, and she said, you know, this is in 1926. She said, I just didn't want it to be written by, directed by, and starring Mae West.
Right.
So she used the pseudonym Jane Mast.
Mm-hmm.
And so Joan has taken this route, and in the very front of the book about the fake author, she includes a little blurb there where she says that Joan Crawford was born Lucille LeSueur on March 23rd, in a year she claimed was later than other sources have alleged. This does not mean that Miss Crawford distorts facts to suit herself.
Right, exactly.
So she pretty much acknowledges what she's doing and that she sets her tone right up front.
Mm-hmm. You know, I think this is an interesting lesson in a way for those who may be hiding in the closet thinking about coming out, that sometimes you may have to play the game under a pseudonym, so to speak, and hide a little bit until you have made your moment. You know, I know for me, when I was hiding in the closet, it was not the easiest thing, as it is for most of us, to like think about, okay, I'm going to just be who I am and come out. But yet there were moments where you were playing both roles. You were being, I know for me, I was being Rick, the father, the husband, all that stuff. And then there were moments I was playing Rick, the hidden gay man. And having that dual identity is part of what kept me somewhat sane. And I think it's kind of interesting to see that she's come forward using, you know, her original name in this book to really show, this is who I am at my core. This is always who I've been. And we all know that many celebrities, you know, they don't use their original real names. They use something that is more catchy, that will look good on the big screen,
yes,
be, you know, whatever it may be. But I think it takes a lot of truth, honesty, and transparency to come to this space of, this is who I am, and I'm revealing myself in this way. And I think that's a beautiful lesson that many of our listeners will see, that you always are who you are. There's no getting away from it.
There is no getting away from it. And I would like to comment on what you just said about playing a dual role as father and husband and then a closeted gay man. Not everybody, unless they've done something like that, played some kind of dual role, whether it's corporate, mm-hmm, politics, whatever, you know, where you were gay, but you just simply could not be out and you had to play the game.
Yep.
Many people just don't realize the brains and stamina it takes to pull something like that off.
Oh, it's
and it
exhausting.
Consumes, it can be exhausting, but
yeah,
the fact that you were able to do it and that you had that kind of psychic stamina is really something that I hope you're very much in touch with as a person and appreciate that trait within yourself.
Oh, I am very much in touch with it. And, you know, to put it in another frame, and I'm not proud of it either, but what I realize is it took what it took until... That was when the camel's back broke, so to speak. It's like, okay, I cannot do this anymore. It's not healthy for me. It's not serving my family. And I know it's a little bit different than, you know, what we're talking about here with Joan in the book, but it is that piece of, I think all that any of us want to do is be seen for who we are, plain and simple.
And to live, mm-hmm, that life without persecution. And there are no shortage of sources who will persecute us. I mean, there are many people standing ready to do that, you know, to point a, mm-hmm, finger. There's a Buddhist saying, people will complain if you say too little. People will complain if you say too much. People will complain if you say just enough.
Right.
No matter how we try to live our lives, there will always be naysayers and always people who will want to take us down for whatever reason. It's, mm-hmm, threatening to them. They want what we have. It varies. But it is difficult to go out and live your life honestly, because there is always persecution until you come to the realization that that persecution is just immaterial and unreal, mm-hmm, and really has no bearing on us as people at all.
Yeah.
They're within the host, not within us.
Absolutely. No, I think when we can take personal responsibility for what's going on, in fact, I just had a conversation about this with someone yesterday, that our ability to own who we are and how we show up in the world, it's the golden ring. It's the thing of, okay, this is my responsibility. It doesn't mean that other people aren't going to influence us. That doesn't mean we can't take on like some of the external stuff, but how we choose to respond, how we, you know, show up in the world is really all our own responsibility. So I always like to make like quirky parallel, you know, connections with what's going on the Coming Out Lounge and the guests. And I've done some really interesting, weird interviews where people are like, really, you're going to have that person on? And then what does that have to do with coming out? But I feel like there's a beautiful parallel here to this book and some lessons within the book, even though it's fun, it's a parody, and it's just, you know, this crazy story about her standing at Heaven's Gates and possibly not, you know, getting in for a long term and everything. But if you could pull a parallel out of this book that relates to the coming out journey or someone who's hiding in the closet, you know, you're the guy who's her publicist doing all this for, what would be one of the parallels you might see to either being gay, coming out, that somebody could really find this little nugget of wisdom within the book?
Rick, as human beings, we create our own mental, emotional prisons one brick at a time, and we get a lot of help from the outside with that. We get our cues from family, social, cultural, about what we should be but aren't, about what we are that we should not be. And this book really is a peeling back of the superficial cultural layers to which so much of our society subscribes today. Mm-hmm. The posing on social media, the posing as reality starlets it's like people are chasing hits of public attention. It seems like a heroin addiction, you know? Yeah. Oh my God, I've got to get another like or I'm going to go into withdrawal.
Right, right, right.
And what Joan tells us in this story is, to repeat something I said earlier, you're okay as you are. What you are at core is okay. You do not have to put on a drag outfit that you think is going to titillate or amuse someone else to attract their attention, because it's fake. Sooner or later, it's going to be in a crumpled heap at the foot of the bed, and then where will you be? Mm-hmm. You know, when it's just you and your drag outfit is laying there on the floor.
Yeah. But you know, as you were talking, here's a parallel that just hit me as we were going through that there's this other side that could be the reason that somebody might stay hidden in the closet, because of all of this crazy reality stuff, this ability to post everything on social media, for everything to be in our hands in a moment's notice, to, you know, the fear of missing out, all that FOMO stuff. It could be the reason that somebody's like, if I come out in a nanosecond, my whole life could be turned upside down, inside out, not just with the people I just told, you know, in my inner circle, but all it takes is one post, one Instagram picture, one, you know, any Twitter, and suddenly, and we've seen this happen with many, many celebrities, it's all over the place in a heartbeat. And I think for many people, I know if I had thought that's what would happen to me clear back in 99 when we weren't anywhere in the social media arena, but we were starting to have, you know, chat rooms and things such as that and a little bit of AOL stuff going on, I don't know that I would have had the energy to come out of the closet. I hadn't even thought of this until you were talking about that. I wonder if maybe this is a beautiful parallel to maybe people don't want to do this because they know this could, like wildfire, take off. And then what about my reputation? Which is very similar to what happens in Hollywood these days.
It takes one post, and as you just so aptly said, once you release a post or someone else releases it on your behalf or not your behalf, mm-hmm. it's out of your control.
Yeah.
It's a wildfire now, and it will go anywhere it wants, anybody wants to send it. And you really have to look at the upside of this as when you make decisions about challenging a bureaucracy. You know, I look back at the people who overturned slavery, you know, mm-hmm. Harriet Tubman, how many dozens of trips did she make on the Underground Railroad escorting people from the South to Canada, and then would go back to do it again? Mm-hmm. And, you know, you can draw a parallel with that to being gay, because she knew what the downside was for her, and she knew what the possibility of injury or death was. And when you're gay and thinking about coming out, particularly before the 21st century, there was not necessarily a big safety net of social or family acceptance waiting for you.
Mm-hmm. So true. You know, and I also see kind of some parallels here to the fact that realness has become such a catchphrase. And, you know, authenticity, of course, and that word bugs the crap out of me. But being real has become like what this is all about. Yet there's a price that's associated also with being real. There's a positive impact of being real, but then there's a big price for being real. And in this book, there's a lot of realness that shows up about Joan and where she's been. And, you know, yes, some confessions about, you know, as you brought up, the Monster Dearest. And I think there's even something in there about the Brady Bunch, but I'm going to kind of leave that one for the readers to go discover themselves. But being real has a cost. And I think that might be an underlying message that Joan's trying to put forward here, that there is a cost, but the benefits are still much better than hiding in the closet, so to speak. Is that a pretty fair assessment?
Well, being real most definitely has a cost. It's almost like, let's say you want to go for a long swim and, you know, you got to jump into that cold water and you know it's going to hurt in that first minute.
Right.
But once you start swimming, you realize, oh man, how could I have stayed on the shore?
Yeah. Yeah. It's so true. So as her publicist on this book, I'm curious, because usually I would ask the person themselves, but it sounds like you've got a pretty much direct line into how Joan thinks and things that she would say. I'm curious what her answer would be to the last question I always ask in every interview on the Coming Out Lounge is, if you could give someone who's in the closet, maybe just stepping through the door, maybe on the other side of the doorway, but any of those scenarios, pick one or pick all, if she could give them any piece of advice from her beautiful life and all the things she's learned about stardom and living her life the way she's meant to live it and being that brash, bold woman in Hollywood, what do you think she would love to leave the listeners with as just a gem of wisdom?
Well, as you identified, Rick, the whole book is about being real and peeling back the fakeness that we live around. The last line in Joan's new rap music video, Bitch, Selfie Ain't Make You No Movie Star, is this. Yo, drop the posing reality starlet pattern. Believe in you and what you do. It's work and study that matters. So I believe that Joan would counsel us to be true to yourself. Use everything you have, every asset you have, and keep swinging, keep punching, keep kicking. Be true to yourself and move forward.
It's awesome. It's completely awesome. Well, I want to say thank you for the time you've spent with us, Elle, and giving us the insights to the book. Again, the book is called Mommy Smearest, See Joan Crawford in Bitch Selfie Ain't Make You No Movie Star. We'll have links to where you can get the book and the video and all this stuff on the show page. Thanks so much for being part of the Coming Out Lounge today. We really appreciate it.
Rick, thanks so much on behalf of Joan.
Thank you. And if you've enjoyed what you've heard today as I've talked to Elle and kind of channeled Joan through this, you know, give us a little bit of love over there on Facebook, maybe out on iTunes, wherever you're picking this up, could be SoundCloud. And, you know, spread the word that the Coming Out Lounge really is telling some cool stories, having some cool interviews, and bringing some awesome messages to the coming out journey. And with that, we're going to make it pretty simple this week and say sayonara. And we can't wait to catch you next week where we step out, step up, and step into living our powerful truth. I'm Rick Clemons, the Coming Out Coach, and you've been listening to the Coming Out Lounge. Take care, everyone. Hey, 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 closet dwellers and Coming Out Lounge listeners. I wanted to ask you a question. If you could take stress out of your journey, be more content in who you are, and find ways to do some of the most difficult things that you need to do as you come through the closet doors, would you do it? I bet the answer is yes. Why do I know this? Because I have been getting requests from listeners and clients or prospective clients about finding ways to just address certain things in their coming out journey. Some people don't want to work for a long time, and I totally get that. And that's why I've designed some brand new coming out coaching one-on-one sessions. These are very focused, topic-specific sessions. For example, maybe you're looking at coming out midlife and how do you do it? Could be that you're already out, but you're not completely out and you want to talk about how do I do this and come out at work. Could be that you're having trouble even accepting yourself as a gay person. And might there be a possibility that you're really struggling with your sexuality and your religion? Depending on what you're looking for, I've designed 9 powerful, highly focused one-on-one laser coaching sessions that you can choose from. Each session goes for 90 minutes. We stay specifically focused on the topic at hand.
And each of these sessions also includes a copy of my book, Frankly, My Dear, I'm Gay. So now that you've heard about this, how would you like to go check them out? Well, here's how you do this. Go to thecomingoutcoach.com. On that page, you can scroll down. You'll see stuff for the book and for some other offerings, but then you'll see one-on-one coaching sessions. Click on that button, and it will take you to a page that describes each of the 9 offerings that I have. If you happen to be listening to the podcast right now, just look over to the right-hand side of the show page, and you'll see one-on-one coaching sessions right there. Again, just click on that button and go check out these new offerings. So, what do you think? Isn't it about time that you stepped out, you stepped up, and you stepped into resolving whatever the biggest issue is in your coming out journey? I'm Rick Clemons, the Coming Out Coach, and I can't wait to work with you one-on-one.
You've just experienced the Coming Out Lounge. Go online to www.comingoutlounge.com to learn more. And tune in again next week for more stories and tips for being true to yourself.